Tired of sugar-coated news and corporate spin? Check out The Nicole Sandler Show, speaking truth to power with the irreverence it deserves. Smart, fearless, and just the right amount of snark, Nicole breaks down the headlines, exposes the hypocrisy, and talks with the people working for real change. Weekdays at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on Progressive Voices, NicoleSandler.com, Substack, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't just get the news, get the truth.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is reporter Sarah Burris. I love talking to Sarah. We get into current headlines, but before we do, the Start Me Up podcast is independent and woman-run. I offer a show every Tuesday just for patrons called What's Up, where I get a little more personal and talk about whatever's on my mind. I also offer an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Look at the different tiers and support the show today. Now, please enjoy my conversation with Sarah Burris. Welcome back to the show, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my God. Everything is crazy. Everything is crazy.
I mean, it's we're not even to the end of the week yet.
I know.
I'm exhausted.
I know. I am too. So as we usually do, before we get into all the stuff I've got prepared, I want to know what's on your mind. What are you thinking about? What are you writing about? Tell me.
Okay. So there was one of the main stories that happened so far this week is that Trump announced that he was going to endorse Ken Paxton over John Cornyn for the U.S. Senate race in Texas. And you know, that obviously is a story in and of itself, but Susan Collins made this comment, and I'm going to read it to you just because it's such a holy cats moment. She said, "I legitimately don't understand the confusion. Like how..." Oh no, that's not mine. The her actual comment is, "I don't understand it," as in I don't understand the endorsement.
Right.
"He is an ethically challenged individual. John Cornyn is an outstanding senator and deserves, in my judgment, the president's support. Obviously it's the president's call, but I'm disappointed that he did it." Oh. And my comment is, do you really not understand this? Like, why are you confused about
and
this?
And so, like, disappointed again.
Right. Now she's always concerned and disappointed. Yeah. but what it reminded me of is a couple of weeks ago, there was a report about Chuck Grassley was presiding over the confirmation hearing of Donald Trump's Fed chair nominee. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Democrats ask every single nominee is who won the 2020 election, because they want to figure out,
right,
one, are they an election denier, or two, are, you know, they going to risk getting themselves in trouble with the president?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a catch-22. And typically the answer has been Joe Biden was declared the winner, which is,
right,
the roundabout way of saying,
right,
you know, of avoiding the question altogether. But so in this case, it was that question again, and Democrats kept asking it, and Chuck Grassley turned to one of his aides and he's like, "Why can't he say that Joe Biden won the 2020 election?" Like, he legitimately seemed confused why this was something that he could not talk. And I'm like, so this Susan Collins thing and this Chuck Grassley thing together, it is so far removed, not just from the reality of what's going on in the rest of the country, but the reality of the Republicans' own party.
Yeah.
Like, they don't even understand how Donald Trump is ruining their own party, is, you know, is obviously the one in charge of everything. They have no clue.
Do you think that it's like, okay, there's this whole thing that, you know, I love, how can I say this? There's a collective reality, something we all agree on, right? We all agree the sky is blue. We all agree that airplanes fly. But then, you know, we like to say, well, there's the truth. But my truth, mm-hmm, is not necessarily MAGA's truth. Or I should go with belief, because beliefs are not necessarily true. right? You can believe something that isn't true. People believe the world is flat. It is not. So, I mean, when you've got this party that has got, I mean, first of all, I just want to point out that Lindsey Graham predicted it. Remember that fucking tweet back in 2016? If Donald Trump becomes the nominee or whatever, he's going to ruin the party. So he already predicted that was going to happen. And now it's happening. It's been happening. And so you've got people genuinely confused in that party that it's happening, even though it was predicted. Do you think that it's just that they have been living in this GOP bubble that they are genuinely confused? Or are they, like, what is going on with them? I think that maybe it's just like I would say it's either like a threat or compromise or something like that, or they don't even know what reality is anymore. The collective reality that we agree on.
So I think there are two things here. One is many Republicans, particularly MAGA Republicans, it seems like they are living in a different reality. And yeah. Nicole Wallace, who I love watching her, Nicole calls it Earth One and Earth Two.
Yeah.
Which is so brilliant. It makes so much sense. What I feel like in this case with Collins and Grassley, I think they're living in not just a Republican bubble, but a whole different bubble of, you're really, really old and you're living in the Senate cloakroom.
Right.
They are so isolated from not just normal everyday American life, but even normal political, Republican political life. They are just that far removed in like a bubble in a bubble in a bubble.
Right.
And I don't see how that ever benefits both the rest of the country, but even if I was a Republican, I would just be like, maybe it's time for you to go.
Wow. Well, and she's running again. You know, I mean, there was that ad that she put out where she's opening running shoes and she's like, okay, that fits because I'm running again. And she's shaking the whole time. And, you know, there's been a couple of videos. I know Keith Edwards did one, and I know the epistemic, whatever, crisis doctor on Instagram also commented on it. And they said it's either, you know, Parkinson's, and I don't remember the official medical term, but there is a medical term for like kind of tremors that some older people will get. So it's like, this woman is very, very old. And she promised when she first ran, she would only stick around one term. She's been there like a gazillion years. And, you know, I mean, I have like a conspiracy, hardcore conspiracy theory that I don't know is true. I'm not even promoting this as true, but I'm like, why is, you know, I'm sure that people like this woman are addicted to their power. They like the power that they have. Mm-hmm. So that absolutely makes sense. But then there's another argument where she's getting to an age now where do you want to retire and have a decent life? I mean, I know there are a lot of political people that they don't want to. They just want to fucking stay in it. That's who they are. That's their whole makeup. But it's like, I wonder if somebody is kind of keep telling her to stay in the party because she probably would have a better chance at winning than a new unknown name. I don't know. It was just like a theory because it's like in this day and age, what the fuck is going on? You know?
Yeah. I think your latter comment is spot on. I don't know that another Republican in Maine could win that seat. I think she is, even though what's unique about Susan Collins is she votes with Trump like 96% of the time.
Yeah.
That was lower in his previous term. I think I want to say it was maybe in the upper 70s is the percentage of what she voted with Trump. But this time around, I mean, she's full MAGA. And so it really doesn't match. I mean, your other senator is an independent. And I mean, like, obviously caucuses with the Democrats, but dude will not join the Democratic Party. And so it seems like Maine has a much more of an independent streak. And so the idea that somebody would be voting with Trump that much of the time and still have a chance at winning. Yeah, just kind of blows my mind.
Right, but I think it's because there is this narrative on about her that she's more of a centrist. And people are looking at the narrative as opposed to her voting record and her actions, you know?
Well, I think at one point that makes sense. Like, there were a lot of Republicans who used to be centrists. Hell, mm-hmm. John Cornyn right. used to be an actual conservative that was mm-hmm. so far right that people believed he was full MAGA. And his voting record, ironically, is 99% of the time with Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in his case, obviously, 99% is not enough mm-hmm. for Donald Trump. and so I think at one time, whenever our politics was more normal, when it was people like, you know, Barack Obama in office, if she was willing to cross the aisle, she was just like, that was a good example as a mm-hmm. centrist. And, but to keep her any kind of power or legitimacy in the party, she has to obviously kowtow to the party's leader.
Yeah.
And
so upsetting.
Yeah. But like, I mean, again, like she's, what is she, 75, 73? Yeah. Something like that. And there is this very anti-incumbent sentiment, particularly with the old folks. Mm-hmm. The only exception being Bernie Sanders. Everybody is like, you know, he can die there. he can die in office. Like, he can be the, what was it? The Robert Byrd, where he's like mm-hmm. dying on the floor, right? Mm-hmm. Of the Senate. That's going to be Bernie Sanders. But everybody else, it's like the country is like, go away. We're done with you. We don't want you. You know, and I agree, like, we need new leadership, if for no other reason than the world is changing so fast mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that there is a necessity for policy that can face some of these issues. So like things like AI and other tech issues that we have no laws about, because everything is changing so quickly. And I feel like maybe people who are much more in tune with the rest of the country would understand, oh crap, like we have to make laws about this. Whereas right now, a lot of these older people are just like, meh.
Yeah. And I mean, I know that I just want to be clear here. This is not about ableism or ageism or anything like that. We're talking about, it's not about mental ability or anything like that. It's just about, where are your priorities and how do you see this country? And you know, there are a lot, like you were just pointing out with Bernie Sanders. I think the reason why people are like, yeah, he can die there is because regardless of what your personal opinion is, he's got progressive ideas and he sticks to those progressive ideas. And that's what I think that's what people like about him. And then
not even just that, like he, of all of the politicians in the Senate, he seems to connect with voters on a regular basis.
Yes, he does. You're right. Like, very
much. It is not like a, you know, I'm reading a poll and giving my opinion based on it. He actually talks to people. Mm-hmm. He spends time being
he convinced people in West Virginia to want Medicare for all. Now, I mean, it was just a small group. I'm not talking about the entire state. But, you know, when he had a town hall or whatever it was, he convinced them. So he does have that ability. And, you know, and so he is in touch. He's, you know, again, you can love or hate. And I have had both emotions, you know,
right,
where he's
right,
concerned.
Yeah.
But I feel like he never leaves his fucking message. It's always about oligarchs. Like, we can't let the oligarchs take over. And he's right. And, you know, whether or not he's ever drafted any legislation, that's not the point on this. The point on this is just his whole messaging. And so I think that, you know, I've always said that any kind of a government literally should represent the people. We should have people of all ages. We should have people of, you know, both sexes, every kind of, I don't know how you would even call it, just demographic that we can get in there, because that's a country, you know? So, that's the problem with some of these old school people, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, any of the old schoolers are kind of going on the older ideas. And we are moving at rapid speed and we need our elected officials to keep up no matter their age. So I just want to be clear, because I don't want anyone to think we're saying old people have to go.
Right. And there are obviously exceptions. I mean, we mentioned Bernie Sanders. I will never forget George Miller, who was the chairman of Ed and Labor in the House for a really long time. and would frequently, like, remember the era of when the markets were crashing, and after 2006, like, Congress had a huge conversation about student loans and the high cost of education. And I remember Miller bringing, because I was in finishing college at the time, so like Miller was bringing in all kinds of students and having actual conversations, you know, with young people about their financial concerns. And that's kind of the leadership that I think is, it's more traditional, you know, like, oh my God, you're going to actually talk to voters. You're going to actually talk to people that are in your district. But it is, that is the piece of representative democracy that I feel like we're losing, not just in the Trump era, but it's, this has been going on for a while, where it just seems like we are getting further and further away from that kind of representative democracy. And maybe it's Citizens United that did it, you know, like maybe it really is just about, now it's just all about the money rather than the votes.
Well, yes and no, because I mean, I'm never going to say her name right. Kat Abu, would you know how to say her last name? Kat Abu. Abu Zagala. I don't know how to say her last name. I think she only ran on grassroots. Actually, so did, I believe, AOC, if I'm not mistaken. I could be mistaken. But right now, yeah, Citizens United does make it very difficult for people to not depend on donors. And then you get caught up in the whole donor situation. And yeah, so that's going to play into it. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know. I just, it's all... everything's just overwhelming. Okay, that's the theme of today. When I don't know what else to say, I'm just coming back to you. Everything is overwhelming. Anything else that you want to bring up and talk about on your end?
Right. There's a lot going on. I mean, so on Wednesday, Trump made this comment where he was like, you know, if Jesus Christ came down and counted the ballots, I would win in California because Hispanics love me. And so speaking of reality, every once in a while, there are comments from people where they're just like, you know, he's not funny. He's not funny. This is not funny. Mm-hmm. And I get it. Like, even Colbert has had that conversation with a couple of people in his last couple of weeks. You know, this is his last week hosting the show, which is so sad.
I know.
I can't remember who he said that to and who he was chatting with. But they were just like, no, this isn't funny. And I was just like, you know, sometimes you really just have to laugh to keep from crying. Because how else are we going to survive this? Like, there are not enough antidepressants.
No, we gotta laugh. We have to. Because it's fucking depressing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that has been my big focus this week.
All right. Well, I want to just quickly go over this. I don't want to spend too much time, but I just wanted to ask you how you feel about Donald Trump rewarding Antifa with $1.7 billion slush fund. Which actually it's not 1.7. My boyfriend Bob Seska had pointed out last night, I guess in the text of whatever it is, there's no number amount. So he's going on the assumption that it's an unlimited fund. But regardless, it's supposed to be 1.776 billion, which I believe Greg Oliar is calling blasphemy. So yeah, but isn't it interesting? Because, you know, my MAGA relative told my mother that it was Antifa. So I wonder how she feels about Donald Trump giving Antifa pardons and money.
I mean, if that's going to be the way that they spin it, that's next level.
How did that? I mean, but the thing is like, I bet you right now, if I were to talk to my relative, I would say, okay, he's got the slush fund, and she'd probably defend it. And then if I said to her, but you said that they were Antifa, I don't know what would happen to her brain. I think it would explode and her head would pop off. And I'm not kidding, because I don't, like, I know she would start screaming. That's what would happen. That would be like the legitimate. She would never answer the question. She would just start screaming. But I just don't even understand. I know these people are in a fucking cult. I know they are. So when you're in a cult, you have to decide what your truth is, no matter what you see. So I guess that's what they're doing. But I don't know. What I wanted to ask you about this particularly, not the joke part. How do you see this playing out legally and politically? Do you think that this is just going to go? Do you think he's going to have problems? I don't know. How do you see this? I don't know.
So I know with an absolute certainty that there is going to be a huge amount of litigation around this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that looks like. I'm curious too, if Democrats manage to win back the House,
mm-hmm.
and by some miracle win the Senate, I am curious to see how they will defund that to make sure that it doesn't happen. And it may very well involve defunding the entire Justice Department. Like, I could totally see that happening. I will say too, Amy Vanderpool, who is one of the legal nerds who runs the Shiro Substack.
Mm-hmm.
Amy has posted a lovely template that progressives can use to file their own requests for this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to do it.
I know. So I think it would be hilarious if people just start bombarding.
Yes.
The DOJ, because like they can't even hire enough lawyers to handle the cases that they have before them. So I don't know how they're going to make that work. But one of the like, I think it would be super fun if I claimed that I have Trump derangement syndrome as a result of Donald Trump.
Oh my God. Yes.
Because if Donald Trump didn't exist, I wouldn't have Donald Trump derangement syndrome.
Yeah, I wouldn't have this fucking problem.
So, I mean, an obvious, so, and that would also put them in a very difficult legal position to admit either Trump derangement syndrome isn't real.
Oh God. So see, oh my God, I love this. Now, I just want to kind of point out to everybody, this is what's called suffering up as opposed to suffering down, right? So suffering down is, oh my God, Donald Trump is stealing from us. He's so awful. Oh, woe is me. And then suffering up is what you were just talking about. Doing this, because this is the way we don't have to like what's happening, but we can say, all right, this is happening and this is what we're going to do to combat it. And that's what I love. I love the fighting spirit. I love the fact that that anyone even came up with this.
Yes.
So cool.
And I mean, props to Amy. Like she's also brilliant. And so, I read part of her letter. I haven't read all of it because I just saw it before we jumped on. But she claims that, you know, she was a victim of the Capitol riots. And so the other thing that happened on Wednesday was some of the Capitol police officers filed a lawsuit against this.
Harry Dunn.
Claiming that because, you know, that they are not only victims of the Capitol riot, but also after Donald Trump has pardoned all of the people, they are getting overwhelmed with death threats and mm-hmm. various other things. So the way that they're explaining it in their indictment is something to the effect of, by perpetuating this and giving settlements to these people, you're effectively funding terrorism against me. And there's going to be the big question in that lawsuit is going to be standing, and that's going to be the huge conversation, like the legal nerd conversation around litigation for this specific fund is, you know, how can you prove that this fund wrongs you?
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know that that's going to work, just because I'm not, you know, a legal nerd. I just play one on TV. and so I'm curious to see, you know, how this is going to work out. But there are so many incredibly intelligent people out there who have these conversations that, you know, wrap their mind around like, okay, here's what we can do. Here's what we can try. Mm-hmm. And they come up with really novel ideas. And I love that there are enough people out there who are just like, no, it's like what you were saying. No, we are not going to sit down. We are going to continue to fight for the norms that this country still has, you know, no matter, you know, how much Republicans are trying to push them underwater.
Yeah.
And and so that is empowering.
Yes, it is. It made me feel really good when you told me that.
Yay!
Oh my God. Because yesterday I was so tired. I didn't get a lot of sleep. And so you know how when you're that tired, you just feel really negative. And I was really negative. And I'm glad I don't feel that way today because and now this on top of it just makes me feel even better. So that's awesome. And okay, I want to bring something up. And it's gonna I need to introduce this with a little bit of information. So I apologize to my patrons only who already heard me talk about this, but I'm going to talk about it again. So I'm going to bring up Trump's health, and then I'm going to bring up this piece that Robert Reich wrote. Is it Reich? Yeah, it's Reich, right? Isn't it Reich?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I always forget. Anyway, it's a piece that he wrote about what sophisticated political operatives are saying in private. So first, let's start with the epistemic crisis doctor on YouTube. I'm sorry, on IG, did a post the other day when Trump was in China and he was shaking Xi's hand. So the picture was, it was Donald Trump's hand, and you could see like Xi's thumb was on the part of Trump's hand that was very swollen. Very important here. So he had swollen hands, and the doctor was explaining that when you're in congestive heart failure, especially when you're at the end of it, your appendages start swelling. So we've all seen the ankle swelling. And the doctor was pointing out that that's the first place because number one, it's starting at the feet and then it goes up. But the feet are the easiest because they're always down. They're always pretty much in one position. Trump's not walking around a lot. So his feet are usually, you know, whether he's standing or sitting, they're just kind of in that one position. They're not moving around. So it's very easy, as he was explaining, for fluids to accumulate. He said, but in this case situation, his hand was swollen. And so there was this, there's a test that these doctors give to see how far along you are. And I do not remember the correct name, so I will call it stages, but there were four of them. So the first one is, okay, you got the thumbprint on the swollen part of the hand. You release the thumb. If the hand snaps back immediately, that's one. Four, if it goes all the way to four, whatever this test is they give, when the thumb is removed from the hand, the imprint of the thumb stays for 2 to 5 minutes. That's the information we do not have. How long did the imprint stay? But the doctor was talking about the fact that now that, I mean, granted, Trump was on a plane for 15 hours, so that certainly did not help. But regardless, he said, you know, because it starts in the feet, when it goes all the way up to the hands, it's a real indicator that he is in end stages of congestive heart failure. And then we have evidence that he is in the end stages also of the frontotemporal dementia. I'm not going to get into all the reasons why, but he does. And I've looked it up. I've looked up AI assessments of, you know, how long people with all the things he has, you know, give him about 6 months. Anyway, and obviously that's just a guesstimate. It's not a doctor in front of him, but you know, we're just looking at what we can see. And so this brings me to the idea of, or what Robert Reich was saying. So I guess, you know, he had a dinner with a bunch of political operatives and they shared a fantasy. So I want to be clear here. This is a fantasy. This is not anything more than that. And they gave it 30% odds of becoming reality within the next 4 months. And the scenario is that, you know, because Trump fails Iran war, because the food prices are so high, blah, blah, blah. J.D. Vance, because, you know, in order to get the 25th Amendment going, they only need certain members of the cabinet. So he would go to certain people, make certain promises, and then he'd have enough people from that cabinet. You know, like he could promise Marco Rubio vice presidency in exchange for Rubio joining him to invoke the 25th Amendment, then go to Mike Johnson, then go to John Thune, Pete Hegseth, etc. So I will say, David Pakman noted that the plan has a low success, the odds and the personal risks for both Vance and Rubio, he's saying they're high and they're both looking at 2028. And Reich has updated the story saying the odds might be higher now and pivoting to say that regardless, the better path is a blue tsunami in November to limit Trump's power, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I'm just wondering, like, I think, you know, I mean, there was the theory that Donald Trump was chosen as the 2024 nominee specifically because he's the one who can rile the base. He was the only one, right? He's the only one with charisma in that party. And so they wanted him for that reason, so that he could win. Okay, now he's won. And they need him for as long as they can use him, but he's starting to fall apart now. And they all see it. So, like, this is all just a theory. It's just a fantasy of certain Republicans. How likely do you think that that could be? And how risky do you think it would be for J.D. Vance to do something like that?
I mean, definitely it would be super risky, particularly because J.D. Vance has the personality of a sock with a hole in it. Like, the larger conversation about the 28th presidency and which Republican it will be, I mean, most folks are like, yeah, it's probably going to be Rubio because he's going to be.
I find that fascinating.
Isn't it? Mm-hmm. But he has kissed Trump's ass this mm-hmm. whole time in truly epic ways. Yeah. Like, I've never seen somebody compromise themselves to be such a bootlicker. And I don't know that. I mean, I feel like J.D. Vance is kind of saying all the right things, but he just doesn't seem like, I don't know, he doesn't seem like his heart is in it. If he has one, maybe he lost it between the cushions of the couch. I don't know. But he just, like, his personality is so boring. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I mean.
Yeah, but, like, Rubio is not exciting.
No. Well, I think he can be if he tried.
How?
I think he would need a little bit of like a little bit of a personal coaching kind of mm-hmm. thing. Like, yeah. Somebody needs to write some jokes for him that he can recycle. He's clearly he's knowledgeable and he's mm-hmm. smart for who he is.
Right.
Whereas Vance just seems like truly a snarky kind of ass to everybody. He just he can't speak without seeming like he's being an asshole to somebody. Like, can you just talk to a normal human being without being crappy to him?
Right.
And
and Rubio has the experience of being in government for a long time.
Yeah, which makes Rubio scarier to me.
Yeah.
The other thing too, I think, is that J.D. Vance is like, you really don't know who the hell he is, because he's kind of all over the place and he's never really committed to one issue or another. He just pretends like, oh, this is going to be my issue for the day right now. And then he's going to change it 3 years later.
Yeah.
And pretend like you're stupid for asking the question about it.
He said Trump was Hitler.
Right. Remember that one time? So the other piece of this is that you have to have 8 out of 15 cabinet members mm-hmm. to agree to this. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that Vance has that. I mean, mm-hmm. I think Trump specifically put people in that cabinet knowing that there was conversation about the 25th after January 6th. And that people that were in the cabinet at that time really had questions about mm-hmm. his intelligence and his mental faculties, and that was 8 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. So the people that are in there now are such sycophants that I think they're there for the only reason,
true,
being to protect him from anybody trying to pull a 25th on him.
Well, you know, frankly, I hate saying this, but I don't really want them to. I know that we're all calling for it, and I think we should continue to call for it. I think that's important. But, like, my little secret fantasy, I guess you could say, is the longer Donald Trump is there, because we all can see, you know, he's failing. I don't know how long he has. I say this all the time, but nobody can tell us, oh, he's going to die at this time. Nobody knows. Or he's going to become incapacitated and can't speak. But the longer he's there, the more damage that he does, the more it helps democracy in the bigger picture, not in the short run, because he's killing it, right? He's killing and damaging it right now. But he is, you know, it's that whole boiling the frog scenario where if they would have been smart and taken their time implementing fascism, the country might have missed it and not gotten it, but they keep trying to ram everything through. And so, mm-hmm. and he is so vile and disgusting. and people are turning on him. I mean, I don't know if you saw Massey was mocking him. Uh-huh. I believe it was in his concession speech where he was saying, you know, he was mocking Donald Trump. He was speaking like him. And he was saying that he told me this every time I call the president, he tells me this story. It was something about Wharton, that he went to Wharton. And I can't remember exactly what the story was. But then Massey says to his crowd, you know, this is the third time he's told me the story. It's like he has it written down. It's almost word for word every time. And his Massey's constituents were all laughing at Trump. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like, you know, as hard as it is, and it's not something I am saying, oh, this is what should happen or not, but hey, I can see the longer Trump is there, the more unpopular he becomes. And I think the threat is, if, you know, if we get a J.D. Vance in there, the legacy media is going to act like he's normal. I mean, right. I don't know what the American people are going to do. Because it's, you know, if groceries are still really expensive in 2028, providing we win in 2026, if oil prices and gas prices are still really high, yeah, I think the Democrat has a much better shot. But if we have what appears to be, and I say, you know, emphasis on appear, a sane guy in there, the legacy media is going to treat it like, oh, everything's back to normal now. And then mm-hmm. all these people who pay attention are going to be like, okay, well, everything's back to normal now. And that's my concern. I don't know that that's going to happen, because they're still going to be fascist and there's still going to be so many fucking problems. But I'm just, you know, I don't know. I think, like, do you agree, or do you think it would be better if, like, Trump were to somehow, for any old reason, he's not president now and we've got J.D. Vance. Do you think that a J.D. Vance presidency is, I mean, it's going to come with pros and cons for the Republican Party. And so what do you think the cons would be?
No, I agree with you. I think the worst thing for Democrats would be if Trump was ousted or he dies in office or whatever. If he is gone and the presidency is handed to J.D. Vance, it is far worse for Democrats. Right now, I think Trump's control over the Republican Party, particularly when it comes to the primaries, like what we saw, you know, with Cassidy's race in Louisiana and then with Massey, that's a brilliant example of, this is what happens when you are energizing just the MAGA base.
Mm-hmm.
Like it seems like other Republicans are just out, you know, and I don't know if that means, like we're seeing in polling, the coalition, the Republican coalition that Trump has built, they're just like, I'm done with you. Yeah. But the MAGA people, that like little 30% of the GOP is still happy and peppy and bursting with mm-hmm. life, and they're ready to vote for whoever is opposing people like Collins and at all. But in the case of Massey and Cassidy, it's so nice to see somebody just mm-hmm. being like, YOLO.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they kind of are going full Tom Tillis.
Yeah, now that Massey's out, it's like Allison Gill said, okay, he's going to get louder.
Yeah.
So
already good. You're seeing that with Cassidy. Mm-hmm. And there was somebody who posted a screen capture of a Politico report from over the weekend where it said, you know, Cassidy says he's not going to turn against the president or whatever, but then you see like a bunch of other quotes that he's given to reporters where he's like, yeah, I don't support this ballroom crap and like all this other stuff. So
right, and then he voted against the Iran war, so
yeah, so uh-huh. this is we're kind of in that fun YOLO era for the next 6 months because of Donald. Like, this is a problem of Donald Trump's own making. I don't know that if the Democrats win the House and the Senate, if they can stop everything, but I know that it puts everything on pause.
Yes.
I know that it will, stop a lot of things. And
I mean, I do think though, like, I will say this, if let's just say we have a J.D. Vance presidency because something happens to Donald Trump, I think that there is that danger that, like I said, the legacy media is going to make him appear more sane. But I think we're still going to be dealing with a lot of the same problems we're dealing with now. He's just not, but the benefit to the Democrats is he doesn't have nobody likes him. And so I mean, obviously it would be him, right? I would assume, we would all assume that it would be him. That would be the guy. He would be the president. I guess then Marco Rubio would run against him. And I have a really hard time. I mean, I get what you're saying, that Marco Rubio is scarier because he's been in government. But I have such a hard time. I cannot see some big excitement about him in 2028. Because I think what we're going to see on our side is we're going to see this huge, we're going to see all kinds of energy. Of course, it's going to be a bloodbath in the primaries and everybody's going to fight because that's what we do. But, you know, once we settle on somebody, I think whoever it is that we choose, I have a feeling it's there's going to be a lot of energy around this person and it's going to be really exciting. And I don't think Marco Rubio or J.D. Vance or anybody in that party would really be able to counter that. I mean, I'm just guessing and I don't fucking, what do I know? I thought Kamala Harris was going to win. So, I mean, but do you agree with that or do you think that there's more of a danger?
I do agree with that. I think that the smart thing would be for Republicans to choose somebody like Rubio, because he will get the crossover appeal that Republicans have lost. And I don't think that J.D. Vance has the capacity to rebuild that Trump coalition.
No.
Like
he's not going to be the nominee. There's no way. I don't see that happening.
I mean, I can see him being the nominee because, again, like MAGA is controlling that party.
Yeah.
So you have a bunch of.
But does MAGA like him?
I think they like him better than Rubio.
Interesting.
So it just kind of, it will come down to.
Well, that's good then. Because then if I know that Rubio would need independence, right? They all need independence. So that would really be the determining factor. And like, what do independents think? Because the MAGA crowd is so fucking small. But they could split the vote though. Well, no, in a primary, never mind. But they could split the vote if, let's say if Rubio gets the nomination and it's time to vote and MAGA people are pissed. Did they just stay home? That could happen.
I can definitely see that happening.
Well, let us pray.
I know. But I mean, I don't know that he makes it through that primary just because, right. I mean, unless some state laws change to allow for open primaries where independents can start voting in Republican primaries. Right. I think from now on, your Republican candidate is going to be crazy MAGA. And in the past, if you had that kind of candidate, it was like, you know, thank God Democrats are easily going to walk into this.
Mm-hmm.
But
not so much anymore, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Trump changed that. But I mean, that was one of the major things that Hillary Clinton's campaign really worked to try and do is get the most extreme candidate. And for that purpose, because everybody's going to be like, no, he's too crazy. I'm not voting for him. And I'd rather, you know, the devil I know meets the devil you don't. And so I don't know that
I know we're jumping ahead. Everybody on social media was like, why are you even talking about 2028? You know, but I can't help it because what I want to do is make the assumption that we're going to win 2026 in such a good way. And then we can start focusing on because like I think that's why everybody's so excited about Trump dying, just because it's like, oh, my God, can we end this chapter? And I will say if Donald Trump were to die at this point, yes, I do think that there would be a danger in, you know, the legacy media making everything seem normal, but there would be an unknown. I don't know. There's just something the unknown would come up.
Yeah.
And it's something that no one can predict. There's that factor of, okay, what's the unknown energy or whatever you would want to call it, that would come up that we're not anticipating right now. And I don't even know if that would be negative for the Republicans or positive for the Republicans. But what I do want to bring this up because there's no official number right now, but as far as the midterms, the voting between the Democrats and the Republicans, like I said, we don't have an official number. It's happening. But what we've got right here is in North Carolina, about 800,000 Democrats voted in the primary versus about 626,000 Republicans, roughly a 174,000 vote Democratic advantage. So in Ohio, the Democratic ballot nearly matched the Republican turnout with about 250 more Democratic ballots requested than the comparable 2022 cycle. And then in parts of Texas in early voting, and this is exciting, Democrats slightly outpaced Republicans in participation. So I want to ask you specifically about Texas. We can talk about the fact that, you know, Democrats are voting in larger numbers, at least that we're seeing. But we've got this whole like Talarico thing. And now that Trump has endorsed Paxton, like he endorsed Paxton and Allison Gill said, okay, I think we're going to turn Texas blue. So we've got a couple of, I don't know what your opinion is on Talarico, but I think that he's absolutely, and I know you know this, emerging as a big player in the Democratic Party. He's got a new way of messaging that is really fitting for Texas because he's religious, mm-hmm. and but not religious in a gross way. And so I'm just wondering, you know, like, what do you think might happen in Texas? Are you feeling good about it?
I'm kind of reserving judgment just because I feel like I've been here before, mm-hmm. you know, like it's like every stupid election we go through this where it's like, yeah. Oh,
we're going to win Texas.
And we're going to win. And then we don't. Right. And granted that, you know, Beto versus Ted Cruz thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was close. Yeah. And so I am curious to see just how much people in Texas hate Paxton.
Yeah.
And so it will be an interesting vote to see once they actually hit the vote count. I don't know if, you know, like a runoff is just not, that's not a huge turnout kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's you have, like, if it's a primary, you're obviously going to have many more people, so mm-hmm. I mean, really, I can totally see the MAGA people running the slate on that. But yeah, like, I'm in the general, oh my god, like, I think everybody wants this to be a competitive race. I'm worried that it maybe isn't going to happen, but I know with an absolute certainty what will happen is that he will be the biggest gift to Democrats, yeah. down ticket. Right. And they have redistricted Texas in such a way that this is what kind of the Indiana Republicans were worried about, where they were, mm-hmm. saying, look, like, you will make everybody, like, these, you'll make five seats more Democratic while taking away those Democratic seats.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Texas, there is a real opportunity because they have based the redistricting on the 2020 election, or on the 2024 election, they are counting on the voters to match that ideology. And mm-hmm. Trump has lost that coalition of, right. people. So if, like, there's a really great chance, if you have a good coordinated campaign and somebody at the top of the ticket who is putting a ton of money and effort into that, that it will energize Democrats enough to come out and take some Texas seats that Republicans never thought that they were going to lose.
Hmm. Oh, please. Oh, please.
I know.
God, that would be great. Okay. The last thing I want to talk about is, you know, obviously we are seeing, I got into the online political arena because of feminism. And then, you know, I found out about the fact that I thought we had passed the ERA. I was like many, many, many Americans, ignorant of the fact that the ERA had never been passed. And, you know, it was a big part of my life for many, many, many years. And when Trump won, it was like such a fucking hit in the stomach, punch in the gut. And it's not that I stopped being a feminist. It's just that I stopped putting a lot of my emphasis on feminism. Even though it's very important, I just felt like, okay, well, we've just taken all these steps backwards. And as we keep going, it gets worse and worse and worse. So we've got this administration, I should just say this regime has been, you know, pushing women back into the, like, home life versus public life. You've got your sphere, men have theirs. Okay, so we know all about that politically. Culturally speaking, though, we've got this country where 2026 and, you know, obviously there's a bunch of angry people, there's a bunch of angry women, and there's a bunch of angry feminist men seeing what's happening. And I'm really happy to see that. And then you go over to YouTube, and this is what I really kind of want to talk about for a minute. There are all these women on YouTube who are doing trad wife videos. Mm-hmm. Have you seen them?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of them.
Okay. So there a lot of them like homeschool and, you know, they live out in the middle of nowhere or wherever. And then it's like all about cooking and cleaning. I take care of my house. Now, I've watched one of these women who I didn't really think in terms of, I wasn't thinking in terms of politics when I found her. And I think I found her back in 2023. And I don't know why, I'm not going to say her name or anything, but she's not, I know this, she's not a Republican. I do know that. Anyway, what I have found in these tradwife things is that a lot of what's happening is you've got these wives who are stay-at-home moms, right? And all they do is they cook and they clean and then they teach their kids and they put it on video. But they're gaining these massive audiences and they're making way more money than their husbands. So then their husband winds up quitting his job to become the producer of the show or to become her helper. And then oftentimes they get divorced and then she gets to keep the show. And so I'm just wondering, obviously we know that there is a certain group of Republican women, conservative women who like the fact that, you know, they've got that status in patriarchy because of their husband. But even these women who are really religious and buying into this whole tradwife universe, they're kind of finding out, oh, wait a minute, I'm making money. I'm the one who's taking care of the family now. Do you think that that's going to, I know this is a very sophisticated question and I'm hitting you with something that maybe you've never thought about, but just something to parse and play around with. Do you think that these conservative women, specifically these tradwives who are able to recognize that they're able to make it out on their own, do they stay tradwives? Do they continue to vote for men who are controlling their lives? Do you think that this could possibly, because it's happening a lot, this is a real thing where these tradwives are getting so much money that their husbands want in on it. Instead of having to go to work. Anyway, so what do you think?
So I think there are a couple of things. One is there are a bunch of these online tradwives who really aren't actually tradwives, who are just pretending to be.
Right. Yes.
There are some people who have figured out, you know, oh, she actually has a job and she's just filming all these videos. And like you said, there are ones who maybe were traditional tradwives. But then obviously once they start making a ton of cash, it becomes a huge problem in their relationship. Yeah. from the cultural perspective, I think that this focus on tradwives brings up something, that's interesting. And that's that it, to be a tradwife, you can't have a job,
exactly, like
a job outside of the home. And it is because, and this is a whole other cultural thing that's happening, women are starting to understand, if I have my normal career and I get married, then I'm going to have to work two jobs.
Nice. Yeah.
And so there are these women who are these tradwives who are like, well, I can just have one job instead of two by being a tradwife.
Mm-hmm.
Or, and in the other part of that, there are these women who are like, I don't ever want to get married because that is going to be my second job, is I'm going to have to deal with, you know, organizing my husband's life, feeding him and taking care of him all the time, which I think is why you're starting to see a larger movement of like single moms who want to have a house together so they can collectively raise children together. Cause it's like, they still want to have kids, but nobody wants to have that stupid second job of trying to feed and water, you know, their husbands because they can't take care of themselves.
They won't take care of themselves.
Yeah. And so, and that is the conversation around the whole, you know, the poor young men can't get dates thing. I mean, that is part of that conversation where, you know, oh my God, women come over to my house and see how disgusting it is. And they're like, I'm out. Yeah, it turns out like nobody wants to date you when they look at you as being nothing more than another job for them to do.
Right. Oh my God. And so, yeah. So now, okay. But let's just bring this over into the evangelical crowd. I know that they are not the majority, but still they have a big mouth, right? They have a big say. So how do these evangelical women deal with it? Like, are they like, yeah, sure, I'll have two jobs? Because a lot of them are evangelicals. It's like, are they waking up? Do you think they're waking up?
I think some of them are. One of the interesting things that I saw a couple of months ago was Pamela Brown did this special on the evangelicals who are involved in, like, that one pastor that Pete Hegseth is, mm-hmm. like, has around him all the time. He, I guess, has his own like little community of people. And there was a panel of women who had left that, I'm just going to call it a cult, who had kind of left that cult. And one, like a couple of them had divorced their husbands after being trad wives and yada, yada. One of them had remained married, and she and her husband both decided, you know, this is not for us. We want a more equitable life. Hmm. Both of us are going to shift this belief, and we're going to agree to have, you know, like, we're both going to take care of the house, and we're both going to make sure we can have enough money to live a normal life with. And so that conversation with that small group of women who had left was enough of an eye opener for me to think, maybe something is changing. And I don't know. I mean, one of the women, to her point, was in an abusive relationship. So I think that obviously is going to be a big factor. But I mean, remember, like, physical abuse is not the only abuse. There's financial abuse and emotional abuse. And so I think that there are women who get into relationships and who are living under the guise of traditional wife, and men can use that as a justification for their abuse. And so I hope that in those cases, you know, you see more women waking up and being like, no. But I think too that there is that cultural shift where women see, you know, this isn't really all that fun for me anymore. Like, it's and that's not to say that a home life and children is not fulfilling enough for them. But if you have that life and you're under the constant thumb of what your husband tells you to, and you have no autonomy, like, you lose your sense of self and your own identity. And I don't know how many people can sustain that over decades.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this has been going on forever, right? You know, we've had the trad wife community, but I think it's kind of interesting when you throw YouTube into it, because these women are finding out that they can, you know, I mean, talk about the second job. It would be a second job, but I think that maybe some of them are thinking about it like, well, I'm home anyway, and I could make additional money for the family, and then they start getting attention. Right? They become the star. And it was funny because, like, this girl that I watched, she lives in Ohio. I call her a girl, but she's a woman. She lives in Ohio. I know her mother is a full-blown MAGA lunatic. And I've been worried because it's like, I like this woman. I like her. I don't know why. I usually don't watch videos like this, but there's something about her that I just kind of find fascinating. And I like when she decorates for Christmas and shit like that. I get into it. And so over the course of this, I guess she started about 10 years ago. She was in her early 20s. And, you know, at the time, I think they had one kid, and she had a job, and I guess he had a job too, although she was the primary breadwinner the entire time. But still, she wanted a channel where it wasn't starting off as a trad wife thing. It was basically, she had this like HQ job or something like, or HR, whatever, human resources job. And so she has this little boy, and, you know, she's like, I gotta balance my work life and my home life. And she's always pumping and doing all the shit. And so she was like, there was nobody on YouTube for me to get advice from. So I thought, well, I'll be the person to start this channel and give advice. And so then it did turn into, you know, it's her whole family and she cooks and she cleans and she decorates and this and that and this and that. And then it was interesting because, you know, moving down the line, I can't remember what year it was, but she told everybody that she was really upset because her husband, she was speaking in coded language, but what you could derive from it was he was doing nothing and I was doing everything. I was making all the money. I was cleaning the house. I was taking care of the kids. I was making all the food and he just sat there. And it was my mistake to agree to these boundaries in the first place. Like we had boundaries and I just stuck to them and he crossed my boundaries and it just, you know, he didn't care. And so now they're divorced. And so it's like she's got over 400,000 followers. And I know she had done some kind of video about what kind of money she can make. And I think one advertiser alone, she made 15 grand just from one ad. That's not talking about how much she's making from views and from YouTube by itself. So she's got, you know, and that's not talking about all of this crap she's doing on Instagram and getting, you know, ads over there and different sponsors and whatnot. So these people are, you know, these women who said, and so you've got all these trad women who watch her, right? And all these women are like, I can do this. I can do this. I can make my own money. This woman's giving, she did a whole school on how you can do YouTube. So it's like, I think that it's kind of an interesting thing that you're seeing these women, even if they're trad women, trad wives, I should say, looking at YouTube and seeing other trad wives making all this money. And then it's interesting because bunches of them are getting divorced or, you know, whether they're getting divorced or whether their husband is trying to cash in with them. I just think it's totally and utterly fascinating because that's not what they are anymore. They're not what you would call a trad wife if they're the ones bringing in all the money. So I just, I wonder how, you know, because this isn't so much of a political thing, but it is cultural, and cultural and political are like married. So, you know, how does that, I just don't know. I mean, we saw Phyllis Schlafly, you know, back in the 70s counter the ERA by being this big whopping feminist, right? She's like out on the road, never home, telling everybody what to do. That's not what a trad wife does. Trad wives are supposed to stay home. But, you know, here she was as a feminist, really, going out and telling everybody that they should stay home. So we did see the hypocrisy of it, and we have seen the hypocrisy of it. But I'm just wondering if now, because not everybody back then could be a Phyllis Schlafly, but anybody can fucking start a YouTube channel now. It doesn't mean that they're all going to be popular. But if they know what they're doing.
You're also seeing that. I see that frequently with some of the female pastors out there, who the evangelical women who have these huge evangelical movements based off of traditional biblical life and biblical marriage, and yet they are making tons of money and have this whole business around this idea of you know, you should be a biblical wife, but I'm clearly not following that as someone who has my own influencer life and yada yada. And so I think that it kind of makes me think of reality TV. You remember when reality TV first started with The Real World on MTV? And it was actually reality TV. You were just watching videos of people yelling at each other. And now it's like even reality TV isn't really reality. It's either scripted, straight up scripted. Or two, it is so carefully curated with the people you're putting together that you're getting the kind of ad-libbing that you would want for your story or, you know, your framing of whatever housewife du jour that Andy Cohen decides to come up with. And so it seems like that it doesn't surprise me that that could then carry over to the reality aspect of streaming media, whether it's YouTube or TikTok or whatever. And like I was telling you, like there have been some of the trad wives who've gotten caught not actually being trad wives, but they're making, you know, all of these crafts wearing these white flowy dresses
Right,
and
exactly.
showing you their latest knitting projects and whatever. But then going to work, you know, full time. So, so it doesn't surprise me that some of this is just
Right.
outright false, or that, or even the ones that are legitimate are just realizing, you know, money is a very, big way to convince somebody of
Yes.
something
else. Well,
like,
yeah, I mean,
you get
freedom. Yeah, it's like you get a taste of freedom. I think some of these people, I think that really would do it because they get that taste of freedom. And I don't, God, I wish I could remember. I saw this group of women. I don't know if they were just trad wives or if they had another kind of title to them, if there was something else that they all had in common. But they were all talking about this particular subject of, you know, being in a relationship where the man held all the power, and they were just kind of going over all of why they don't do that anymore. It might have been a religion. I think it might have either been Mormons or I can't remember. It's like something like that, you know. I can't remember which religion it was. It might have been Mormonism. But still, it's like this culty kind of groupthink where the women have to serve the men. And they grow up in that environment, so they don't even really question it. But the interesting thing now is, you know, I know that certain religious groups can keep people from, pop culture, if the person's going to obey and not mm-hmm. watch it or do whatever, you know, however they limit people from seeing anything. But it's like the world is so big, and noise gets in. And I, you know, and all of these women had like left their religion, and they were all explaining how while they were in it and they were absolutely dedicated to it and want it's like little things start hitting them. Just like a cultist gets that first question. Well, why is this happening? And it's that one thread. And you don't leave a cult after asking one question, but you start recognize, like once that thread is pulled, it starts that whole process, and it might take years and everything, but I'm just really curious to know, like, are the women of today, and I know that the women of today are not all super, super feminist and progressive. I know we live in a big, big country with all different kinds of people, but it just seems to me that with what is available out there, just on a pop culture level with YouTube and all of it, it's just fascinating to me that anybody would even stay under the thumb of a man. And now that, I don't know, now that it's being forced on us, I just hope, I guess I can say, I just hope that it backfires spectacularly, because it kind of has in the past. How much more are women going to take?
Yeah, and I think that's also what you're seeing with the women who are deciding, screw it, I'm just going to be single. I think
right.
that this whole idea of marriage incentives and this right-wing insistence on getting married and having children and catering to men and mm-hmm. and the world of men who you know have been told their whole lives that they're entitled to this and this and
mm-hmm.
this. Women are just, I think, enough to becoming secure enough and brave enough to say, I'm out and I am
mm-hmm.
okay with myself. I am okay being with my friends and that being enough for me. And I don't know if that is enough of a cultural shift that it's become acceptable in social society now to be that. And so that's a big part of it, or if men really have just gone that far around the bin in the, you know, in that whole world of what do you call them? The podcasters who are the
bros.
Oh no, the incels.
Okay. Gotcha.
And they seem to be the loudest voices whenever
yes.
it comes to the whole, you know, I can't get a woman movement.
Yeah.
So you know, it's, I don't know. It's,
I don't know either, man. I just don't know. I mean, I know I was raised by a feminist, and I was raised a certain way. So I get when you are raised with a very religious conservative upbringing, it's just your belief system, right? You know, it's all you know. So it would be very difficult for somebody from that world to understand my world and vice versa. And I get it, but it just, I don't know. It's just, it seems to me that when you can see, like when you can see other people free, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's like, I want that, you know, it's that whole fear of missing out. I want to be free. I want to make my own choices. I don't know. I know that there are certain people who are just happy to go, okay, well, I live in a very comfortable life. And so I'm not going to rock the boat. You know, I can see mm-hmm. that too. So I just don't know where it's going, but I do hope that with what's happening now and all of this anti-woman sentiment and the way women are being treated in general, we've taken so many steps back. I hope that the electorate just fights back hard. I mean, that's all I can say. I know we all hope it's obvious. What I'm saying is obvious. And we all want to get democracy to a place where we're better than we were before. I don't want to go back to where we were before. I want to get to a better place. So I don't know. Maybe we're going to see that because he's burning it all down and we have that opportunity to rebuild. So maybe we're going to rebuild better. I hope.
Yeah. I mean, that's the funny thing about saying, I want to burn everything down. I want to change, you know, all of our culture and everything else. It's like, well, there's some other stuff there that you're welcome to burn down.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well. All right. Well, I'm going to end this show today. And I want to say thank you, Sarah. It's always a joy talking to you. I love your perspectives. And I also just want to say that I love that I can bring something to you that I don't even know if you've ever heard of, and you've got all this stuff to say about it. So I just love that. Thank you.
I love having conversations with you. You're really smart. And I know I say this all the time, but you having conversation with another smart person is always nice.
Thank you. And I agree.
It's lovely.
So like I always say, before I let you go, tell everybody where to find you.
You can find me on, I'm on Blue Sky. Every one of my social media is Sarah Burris, really. But I've been trying to post more memes and more silly videos of AI videos of Marco Rubio dancing like an idiot on Instagram lately. So, because again, if you're not laughing, you're probably crying.
Exactly.
So, at least I can try and motivate some folks into laughter right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the fun is on Instagram.
Go follow. Thank you, Sarah, and we will talk again.
Thank you.
It's Jody Hamilton.
And Sean Smith Pierce.
Here's a taste of what you might have missed from the Politics Bar.
Jody, I was listening to you this morning, filling in for Steph. You and Chris were debating. And just for the record, Jody is right. Chris's argument is that there is some truth to what's being said about the left being in their own information silo. Right.
Basically, we started talking about how Gavin Newsom has invited people on his podcast, High Up MAGA Guys.
Yeah. Well-known right-wing propagandists. That's what they are. Yeah.
And my argument is he shouldn't be inviting them because nobody on that side is listening to Gavin Newsom.
Right. It doesn't help to bring propagandists into a sphere where truth matters because they're just going to lie their asses off anyway.
Right.
So here is a public service message for Chris Lavoie. Jody Hamilton is right. Catch all that and more weeknights at the Politics Bar. Available through your favorite progressive radio station, your favorite podcast player, or online anytime at thepoliticsbar.com.